In 3, 2, 1.
It's no secret that the enormous complexity involved in an organizational's digital transformation can hinder its success. Consequently, some 70% of digital initiatives fail to meet their goals. Failure can put an organization at a severe competitive disadvantage, and in some cases, can be fatal. Executing on a solid digital transformation journey is a significant undertaking that demands leadership, commitment, thoughtful planning, and rigorous execution. In this episode, my guest Michael Shank will be sharing invaluable strategies and frameworks on how to successfully tackle digital transformation. So whether you're a nimble startup striving to make your mark or a global enterprise seeking to refine your operations, Michael's insights are incredibly valuable for entrepreneurs and business professionals alike. So if you're ready to take your digital transformation journey to the next level, then this episode is for you. Join me now for my conversation with Michael Shank. Well, hey, Michael, welcome to the program. We're delighted to have you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Michael.
No problem. Now, where are we speaking to you from today?
I am in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, great place. Now, are you a native of Raleigh or are you from somewhere else?
No, I've been in North Carolina for about 18 years, but born and raised in the south side of Chicago, lived in the north side, and go Cubs.
I was going to say that's my next question. Okay, who are we a fan of? So Cubbies are a good team. So I still enjoy watching them as well. Good teams.
I always tell people it's the only bar in Chicago that has live baseball.
That's a good point. You know, and I've been there and the food's great there too, where you are now. It's Raleigh's a beautiful place. So
for sure.
Carolina. We're going to be talking about digital transformation and you're the author of Digital Transformation Success, How We Achieve Alignment and Delivering Results Using a Process Inventory Framework. So I'm excited about talking about this and all things digital. But how did Michael get here? So let's go back. I know you've been doing this for 25 years. You started your own organization. So you're back in school and you've got a course of direction to go to. What made you pick this or how did you get here?
Yeah, so I started my career in technology. So started with Accenture. I was doing Java, C++ programming. I was a technical architect. I ran large development programs. So I did that for about the first 12 years of my career. Then I joined. And during that time, I knew nothing of what the business did. My scope of work was get the code in, get it on time, make sure it works. That was kind of my entire purview. And then I joined Ernst & Young. And then my focus shifted because they didn't really have a deep technology practice at that time. My focus shifted to more business process. And the first project I came across was a large bank in the Southeast that was looking for a business capability model. Essentially one model that described everything that their business did. And I just had kind of this epiphany moment. I'm like, wow, this just seems so powerful. And it just seemed like so much you could do with it. So I dedicated the rest of my time at Ernst & Young, following this thread and doing more of these projects just to learn more about it. So that's where I built this framework, which I think, and I'll explain it, but it really makes everything transparent and visible for people so that they could know precisely what they need to do to transform. So then I went from Ernst & Young, I did a stint at Citibank, and then I left there in March of last year. And I just am such a believer in this concept that I felt like I had to leave the corporate workforce and get the book written, get it on paper. And now I'm hoping to build a business off of it.
Good for you. I'm sure you will. And the book's really interesting. And like I say, it's creating that framework, what works and what doesn't work, right?
For sure.
Now, when we talk about digital transformation, I remember where everything was analog, including the lunar launches and landings. And I mean, it was all tubes, right? And then of course, digital ones and zeros came into play a little bit. I remember the programming. I was a COBOL Fortran guy.
For sure.
Way back in the day, you might remember the foundations of all of those.
I did COBOL in college. For sure.
Yeah, exactly. So it was great understanding to understand process and flow and how that works. So you've seen transformation take place over the last 20, 25 years. We've seen a lot of things. And as digital comes in, everything's going digital. I was a paper planner for years and using a day timer or then the Franklin planner or the Covey, whatever it was. And then it was like, how do I let go of that? You know, and everything became more digital. So it started with BlackBerry. Then we started with all kinds of the technologies and it took a little leap of faith to keep letting go of things, right? Because it has evolved quickly. What's the state of transformation today? Do you see it speeding up?
Absolutely. So with advancements of, you know, most notably artificial intelligence, it's been around for a while, but in November 22, when ChatGPT was released, it really became part of our consciousness a lot more. And so there's automation, there's artificial intelligence, there's a lot of technology advancements, which are going to fundamentally transform how industries work. It's changing business models. So we have the rise of, obviously, the e-commerce business model, which really started in the 90s, but is continuing. But there's things like the subscription model, the platform model, which a lot of the large Ubers and a lot of large tech companies are on. It's changing customer experiences, and customers have a lot of power to vote with their feet. It's going to change the workforce. So with artificial intelligence, a lot of the repetitive and mundane tasks are going to start to be eliminated, and it's going to move the workforce to more cognitive skills and critical thinking. So it's just starting to transform everything. And in the book, I go through a lot of stories, one of them being, it's a classic, but it's Nokia. In 2007, they had over 50% of the mobile phone market. And then that same year, Apple released the iPhone with its superior touchscreen interface, its superior operating system. Nokia never recovered. Fast forward to 2013, they lost 90% of their market share, and they ended up selling their phone business to Microsoft. So it's just a tale that even if a company's not thinking about digital transformation, the market may catch up to them and they may be faced with a competitive disadvantage, or even it could be fatal for their business if they're not prepared.
Yeah, I think it can be fatal for them too. You know, some of the subjects we talk about are staying relevant in the age of digital because things are evolving so quickly. And I talk to people who don't feel prepared or they're worried about it. When a new technology came into the marketplace a decade ago, 20, 30 years ago, it typically created two new jobs. Yep. And today it can get rid of two jobs. A lot of times, and you made an interesting point, is we have to be able to evolve and have the cognitive skill sets.
Yep.
Do you think we're prepared for that as people? When you have just in the US, 75% of the people never went to college. So they never had critical thinking. They never had formal education, which is really about not the content, it's the process of learning, to your point.
For sure.
It teaches us how to learn. And you can go learn outside of college. There's no doubt about it. But that's the key, isn't it? Is to keep learning whether you win or not and how to apply it.
For sure. I think we all need to be up to date, need to sharpen our critical thinking skills. But I also think the onus is on leadership as well. So I write about different innovation models. So in the old innovation models, all innovation came from a hierarchical structure or from a dedicated research and development department, which came up with the ideas, tested them, et cetera. But in these new models, organizations have to democratize innovation, which means creating a culture where initiative is rewarded, where people could test ideas and fail, where accomplishments are recognized. But also leadership needs to enable people with tools and access to data so that they could see the big picture, connect the dots, and come up with novel solutions. There's also another innovation model called open innovation, where organizations go outside of their doors for new ideas and maybe go to the public at large or for the customers to get ideas. So I think it's an opportunity, while it's a threat to the workforce current state, I think it's an opportunity for companies that embrace this to really use it as a way to build a high performance workforce going forward, where leadership is training and encouraging people to tap into their critical thinking to get work done better.
Why do you suppose that companies are resistant to that evolution of change? So you gave the Nokia story. Another one that comes to mind is like Polaroid, you know, who should have invented digital photography, right? Kodak, that's what they did. But they get so focused on what they're doing, they don't look at what those outcomes are, and the disruptors come and boom, up they go. I remember BlackBerry got displaced after 1 year as well, besides they're so focused on their core technologies. I saw one stat that showed the Fortune 500 from 25 years ago, 75% of them don't exist anymore. Yep. And this is the Fortune 500. Why are companies, why are people, why are individuals so resistant to embrace that?
What's interesting, I'm glad you brought up Kodak, because they were so invested in their chemical-based photo business that they really protected it. And they're like, well, digital is going to come 10 years down the road. We're not going to have to worry about it. We're making money off this chemical photo business right now. Well, you know, fast forward, and they actually dabbled into the digital camera market as well, which then got replaced by iPhones with, you know, you don't need a separate device. So I think, first off, organizations have to have a willingness to cannibalize their own success. That while you're making money today, you always have to be looking at the next thing, experimenting, testing, and displacing even your own market. I think the second thing is, and this is a big theme of my book, I think most transformations fail because of organizational complexity. There's just so many different teams with their own perspectives and different languages, that getting everyone on the same page to drive to something as big as a large transformation becomes almost impossible. So I think for some of these organizations, it really just turns into chaos. And I think you used the word earlier, they're so paralyzed, they don't know where to start to move to this journey. So they just get stuck into this spin cycle and they just can't move forward.
Yeah, it's more of a hope strategy and hope things kind of work out for them.
Yep.
Or they get busy with acquisitions, and which mergers, acquisitions, we always tend to go through those kinds of seasons where
it's an option,
or we go buy those technologies too, right? So that even Microsoft or innovations, a lot of people believe Microsoft are great at innovating. They're great at buying up other companies because they're so busy running that machine.
And there's a downside of acquisitions too. I was in a lot of organizations where, yeah, you buy other companies and you have a deadline to do the integration that you give to the street, but you don't have time to rationalize processes and rationalize systems and people. So ultimately what you end up is a lot of redundancy, which just adds the complexity and chaos, which further hinders that march towards digitization.
Is there a good starting point? So we have small businesses, we have enterprise that are all listeners. If we want to be proactive in our transformation, there's a cadence to it. What are the priorities to it? It's a framework. Matter of fact, I think you call it in your book, you call it Process Inventory Framework, and it's a dynamic tool for achieving operational excellence. But what's a great starting place? And why is this methodology different from others?
Yeah. So I mentioned that organizational complexity is the root of that 70% failure. And put a little bit more context, the expected spend for transformation programs is expected to go over $3.4 trillion by 2026. So that's a massive problem. So the antidote to this chaos and complexity is getting your organizational alignment. That's where all your resources can work towards your digital aspirations and what you're trying to achieve from a transformation. To do that, you need to do two things. You need to get vertical alignment. So getting goals, activities, and strategies aligned from the C-suite all the way down to individual contributors. And you need horizontal alignment. That's getting your different functional teams, like your business and your technology and your risk and your audit and all those teams working cohesively together. To do that, you need a common language. And that common language needs to bring all of these different perspectives together so that people know precisely what they're accountable for to drive this transformation. So that's where the process inventory framework comes in. In the framework, I essentially ask an organization, inventory every single process that happens within an organization. And you do that by starting with something that is complete, which is the organizational hierarchy. So you start at the top of the hierarchy and you just ask people, what do you do? And you start collecting this data and then you go down and you ask what people do there, you know, what that next level does, when that next level does, and so on. And you collect all these processes in a hierarchy or a taxonomy so that you know ownership up and down the chain. And then you have all those teams sign off that it's accurate and complete. Now, this is a single language. When I define a digital transformation, I'm not using vague terms like I need to add, you know, this business or whatever. I could be very specific and say, here are the processes that need to be added, or here's the processes that need to be changed. And since I've identified ownership across the way, then now I could say, hey, Joe or Bob, this is what you're accountable for in very precise terms. There's a second dimension to this as well, which is data integration. So organizations have a lot of operational data in various unconnected data stores. So you have your application repository, you have your HR repository, which covers your teams and your people. You have maybe your vendor catalog for who's doing your outsourcing, what they're doing. You have all this information. Now, if you could bring all of this information and co-locate it with that process inventory, now you can take the data elements within those and associate them with the right process or activity in a process that it works on. And this gets you a comprehensive operational intelligence repository. So now you could slice and dice your entire organization and understand, if I replace this system, what people are impacted, what processes am I changing, so that I know when I'm driving a change program, what requirements I need to take care of and how I need to test those so that I could drive this change efficiently and make sure I'm accurate with what the business is looking for with the aspirations.
When you're going through that process, does it help to, in a bigger organization, mid-size or enterprise level, it probably makes sense to have a team who's responsible for that transformation, not
for
maybe
sure.
An individual. Let's say you're a small entrepreneur, you got a small staff or a team, and you don't have all those resources to do that. Is the framework still work for that, or is it a different approach?
No, it still works. I mean, it's obviously, I think it scales to the size of your organization. So, you know, if you're a small organization, maybe it's just one person, maybe it's not even a full-time job, but they keep a list of what everyone does. And then, you know, you could use it for like driving strategy or for your operational excellence. So looking at your performance metrics and seeing, okay, if I have, maybe I want to reduce cost or I want to increase responsive time to customers. Now I could look and say, what specific process is causing that? In large organizations, you have to build a capability. And I write about this in my book called the Process Center of Excellence Capability. And that organization is responsible for documenting this process inventory, for doing that data integration, but more importantly, maintaining it over time. So organizations change, people leave jobs and whatnot. So you need to have some governance where, you know, you go back to the business every periodically 6 months or a year saying, is this still accurate and complete? If not, let's change it. Let's get another formal attestation. But you're keeping it up to date, but also you're integrating it into everything the business does. And I think that's where it becomes easier. The more people use this to do their day-to-day jobs, the easier it is to maintain.
Are there tools that make it useful? Like as a small business ourselves, I've been focused on SOPs and standard operating procedure for doing a certain process. And I find that video works well. So I might put together in our LMS system, we go, here's what we do, here's the outcome, here's how we achieve that each step along the way. So if I do it once and we fine tune it, then we're always, you know, seems like we're always revamping it with the latest technology. But is that a good approach to that as far as?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's like video, and I think that's all great. I think what process inventory brings is a way to categorize that information. And essentially what you're creating with this process taxonomy is a common language. So now you could export it and put it into your LMS platform so that somebody knows, hey, this is the process that I execute. Let me go to the LMS platform and see what training, SOPs, job aids, whatever tools are available for that process. And now I could make sure I consume all those and know that I'm ready to be efficient in my role.
This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions, featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation? ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred, How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company. And now back to my conversation with Michael Shank. When you talk about change and change management, it's obviously a significant aspect of operational excellence. And you talk about that, you know, chapter four of your book, actually, you kind of get into that. What are some of the common pitfalls organizations encounter when they manage the change? And how can they navigate these challenges more effectively?
Yeah, I think when you're driving a transformation, I think you have to start from a business lens. So even though technology is the driver, you need to think about what it is you want in your future state business. So maybe updating your vision and then thinking about how technology advancements can do that. But I think there's two ways. So articulating precisely what that strategy is so that you can understand the impacts from a process perspective. You know, very specific. These are the processes that are changing. These are the owners, and this is what has to happen. I think that the second biggest thing, and it comes down to common language. So you'll have a requirements team talking to a business owner, which then needs to collaborate with a technology person that needs to design technology. And you have risk people trying to determine if there's risks in the new technology or processes, et cetera. So you have all this diverse disciplines that have to come together. And in current state, because a technology person doesn't really understand what the business does, there's a lot of back and forth. And maybe they don't even get on the same page. But now with this, you could say, here's the process, and here's all the steps in the process, and this is what I need you to build. And then a risk person could come along and understand and do their accurate risk assessment. So really, it's a way to get everyone on the same page. And it works through all the steps in the life cycle. So if you start with defining a project charter, defining requirements, doing design, building code, testing, doing your people change management, et cetera, each step of this process leverages this common language to make sure that this change process, which is a pain point for many, becomes very smooth and you could get things implemented on time and with budget much easier.
It's an evolution, not a revolution.
For sure.
Sports metaphor. Unless you're a Chicago guy, so let's use the Bears. Would a football analogy be a good example? Here you have 11 players sitting out on the field, right? And you have a lot of complexity. Matter of fact, I was reading an article that said it's the most complex sport in sports.
For sure.
Because like in baseball, for instance, if we pick the Cubs, the minute that ball's pitched and hit, everyone else is frozen who's not in the play. They're just observing.
Yeah.
In football, you have 11 players and they have three directions they can go, left, right, and up the middle.
Yeah.
That all has to be coordinated. Common language. You've got a few seconds in a huddle in order to get that done.
Yeah.
And then they start to run plays. And yep. then they run a play. Is that a good analogy that people can relate to?
It's something I haven't thought of before, but I think it's great, right? You know, I don't know a name of a play, but you know, I'm going to go back to my rudimentary high school football days, 32 dive, which means that the three back goes to the two hole, right? But in that, the three back knows he's going to the two hole, he's getting the ball. The linemen know what they have to do, you know, is their assignment. So yeah, it's a common language that everyone knows what their role is. So in that way, I think it's a great analogy.
Well, and then after the game, they go in and they're the next day after practice, they're doing their game films and they're doing their assessment.
Sure.
And you advocate for rigorous assessment process so that you can uncover opportunities for optimization and growth. What are some of the key indicators that a business should look for or to know if it's time to reassess their processes and strategies?
It really comes down to performance metrics. There's external factors like, what does the competitive landscape look like? Is the regulatory environment changing? Are there geopolitical? Are regulations changing? There's a ton of external factors, but then there's internal factors as well. How are your performance indicators working? Is your cost profile fitting to what your CFO is looking for? Are you scoring high in your customer metrics and satisfaction surveys, et cetera? So I think you need to look at all of these things and identify what is important to what you need to be as a business future state, and then tailor your transformation program to that. And then process inventory is just an enabler.
Yeah, and take care of it. Now, with your experience, and you've had 25 years of it in the founder and president of your company. Can you share any anecdotes where you've seen aligning businesses' processes with long-term objectives led to transformative impact on that organization? So where you've done the voodoo you do within that organization. This was before. Here was our outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was a consultant for a large insurance company that was spinning off their U.S. life and annuity business. So they didn't feel that was strategically important anymore. And this new business made some decisions around, they wanted to be a low-cost insurance provider. They wanted to excel in a few good things, but then be cost competitive in others. And they didn't want to inherit any of the old parent company's technology. They thought it was too complex and too costly for what they were trying to do. So they came to us and I created the initial proposal, but they wanted to take a city plan approach, which is they wanted to lay out their business from what they did and then make those decisions based on the processes they performed and then drive the transformation through that. So we came in, interviewed the business, created the process inventory for each of the functional areas and did, you know, what is the strategic fit? Is it best in class, best in cost? What are the requirements? And then that base of information was used to do prioritization on what projects get funded first, vendor platforms are going to be selected, et cetera. And then, as I mentioned, the change process, this really was used to go through requirements, design, testing, et cetera. And that transformation program was ultimately a success because we brought such structure and rigor to what they were trying to accomplish that it just made it clear for all the various stakeholders.
And you talked about prioritization. So in the context of digital strategy, how do you prioritize? How do companies prioritize initiatives to ensure the organization's resources are effectively being allocated? Because you can't do it all at one time.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of a roadmap definition that maybe you've been part of or how you identify those priorities?
Yeah, for sure. And there's a common technique we use called heat mapping. But essentially, you ask, if you have the entire map of the organization in front of you, you can just ask a couple simple questions. What is my most strategically important process areas? And then two, which ones are the ones that are underperforming? And those two questions will get you to what are the areas that need the most investment? Because obviously, if I have a high priority process area, maybe it's payments or maybe it's account opening or maybe it's some other customer facing function, but it's underperforming and it's not aligning to what my vision is as an organization, then I need to invest my time, money, and effort into that. And you could use this process inventory to do those heat mapping. And then really, and this comes into your, you know, most companies have a yearly initiative budget allocation process. So if you could do that mapping to what's important, now you could use that to get your budget more objectively to what's needed, as opposed to maybe in a lot of cases, it's based on the strength of advocate.
So it's a matter of looking at how it's going to impact the business, what impacts. And then I'm assuming as you go down that road, it's never perfect. Even when you end up with something, there's constant tweaking or innovation or optimization. Yep. This is the word we would use. How often should we be reevaluating those processes? Is that a quarterly function, once a year kind of a function? Is there a...
Yeah, I think it's probably multiple levels. For the big budget cycles, once a year or whatever that budget cycle is. But that's why I mentioned innovation earlier too, is change doesn't have to necessarily be tied to the big allocation of dollars and the big projects. Is if you arm your workforce with, hey, if you see something that is not optimal or could be fixed, arm them with the tools and give them the leeway to fix things, test ideas, and try change. And if it works, great. So in that way, change and innovation should be at a constant cycle where you're working through the big things on a more rigorous or timely calendar, but you're working on the smaller things and allowing the people to be the engines of innovation and change.
Google does this, and they've got some really good case histories where they allow their people to work one day a week, 2 days a week on projects. We got Gmail because of that. We got lots of tools that we have for innovation. So is that a wise strategy then for companies, small, medium, or large, to create a space for, as you said, democratize the innovation process, so it's not just the nutty professor's job to come up with the latest innovation where we're going to go, but it's that collective. It probably is better for buy-in too, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. In fact, I wrote about the book, and I start each chapter with a story, and this might be integrated into one of the chapters, but 3M. So 3M has what's called a 15% rule. So they expect every employee to dedicate 15% of their time to driving innovation. And that led to things like the Post-it notes and some other their key products. But absolutely, I think if organizations are going to adopt this democratized innovation model, they've got to make it real. And they've got to convey to the workforce that, you know, I'm going to allocate some time so that you could do this. And I'm going to give you the tools and I'm going to reward you for success and reward you for initiative, because a lot of these experiments will fail. But that's okay. That's part of progress.
And I think you talk about that too, how we treat it. In other words, it's okay to get out there. You've got to go through these things. We want to figure out what works, what doesn't, without kind of get ego out of the way. Anytime you're going through a transformative process, though, there's always risks involved. In your experience, how has the integration of digital technologies reshaped the risk management landscape? And what can companies do to kind of stay ahead of these new risks?
Oh, for sure. I have a whole chapter dedicated to that. I worked in big banks in the financial services industry, which is one of the most heavily regulated industries and has one of the biggest risk management profiles around. And I think a lot of the risk management challenges comes down to lack of complete and accurate business context for what processes are in your environment. So a lot of big organizations manage their risk in what's called a governance risk and compliance tool, GRC tool. And at the core of these tools is a data model. And if you think about the data model, it's really a chain of data, which is, what is your process? What risks are associated with those processes? What controls do I need to manage those processes? And then how am I going to monitor those? Now, if you think about risk in an organization, there's a lot of different risk types. There's compliance risk and operational risk, et cetera, et cetera. Operational resiliency risk. Now, if you resolve all of those down to what is the process, and then look at that one single process and say, okay, which of these risk types have these? And then now I could coordinate all of the implementation of controls to that process owner. Now, and because I've added now a structured way, so I've identified every single process that happens in the organization, and I could have a structured way to make sure that my risk assessment assesses all risk types through that process framework. Now I could have a greater level of assurance that I've assessed every risk and I've considered everything, and that my roll up of my risk data that goes to senior leadership is more accurate and complete.
No, that's a good suggestion. Having a process to examine all the processes and risks.
It starts with having an understanding of what all your processes are, which is what the process inventory framework is.
Yeah, because you have them whether you like them or not. It's a matter of taking the time. And we're bad at this. Things evolve. We'll start a process and then we don't keep up with it, or we fall short, or we take a shortcut and it kind of falls aside. And then we reaffirm ourselves again and get back into it, which brings up about the skills and equipping our staff with the skills and tools needed to thrive in the transformative process. What are some of the most critical skills you believe, other than maybe critical thinking, that today's workforce needs to equip them so that they can better foster these skills within their own team? What do they need to have?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I mentioned the process capability, but as you mentioned, processes happen. All I'm advocating for is that organizations take the time to document them all and then bring order to their chaos. So with that, organizations need to invest in a process capability, a process COE, and you mentioned earlier as well, that entails not only documenting processes, but having a high level of rigor, because you're building a repository of comprehensive operational intelligence that has to be accurate and complete, or else stakeholders will look at it. And if they don't think it reflects their business, then they will lose trust in it. And this thing may die in the vine. You've got to have process skills, high quality teams and processes with the rigor. You need to have process modelers, data integration. So I think organizations really need to, especially medium and large organizations, need to think about the skill set to follow the strategy and adopt it. So I lay out five big use cases that you could benefit from this framework, which is defining your strategy in a way that you could understand your impacts, reorienting the change process to be more efficient, driving operational excellence. So looking for where resources are used to eliminate waste and inefficiencies, your enterprise architecture. So leveraging this additional granular level detail, what the business does to design a more agile technology environment and agile and cost effective. And then last is risk management. So for those that are adopting the strategy and are implementing those use cases, you're going to have to reorient your methodologies, your frameworks, your deliverables in each of those, and your team so that they could leverage this information.
How do you know when it's time to evolve the process? So you're looking at it, you've worked hard, you got something in there, and like you said, you got to eat your lunch before the competition does.
Yeah.
So it's making yourself redundant, right? Or cannibalize your own process, was the word you used.
Cannibalize your own success, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When's the right time to do that in our organization or business? We're seeing that now. Prior to the pandemic, companies would ask me, how do you see things 10 years from now? And we're there. To me, it's called the great accelerator, right? Things got better. I really like it, but it changed our models like completely in our process and what's expected and with the value. People don't want to go back to work. They want to work at home. The models have changed, right? And how do you maintain process when you have all of these remote workers and people out there? Do you see anything looking into the future? What emerging trends or technologies do you predict are going to have the most significant, maybe other than AI, on process excellence and operational efficiency, say in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. In fact, I think one of the most exciting things is a concept called digital twin. It is AI, but a digital twin is a virtual replica of the physical environment. And you have to create this virtual replica because in AI and machine learning, you need to put the different data signals that come from IoT or from different systems or from people or et cetera in a consistent business context so that you could feed it to your machine learning models so that it could identify risks before they become issues. They could identify solutions before it has an impact on clients. It could look for inefficiencies, et cetera. This is something that's used extensively in the manufacturing environment. So there's a lot of smart factories that, and I write about some of these in my book, but a lot of smart factories that build these digital models, and then they could drive efficiency. Now, that works extensively in manufacturing because it's a physical space. You go station one, you do this, station two, you do this. So modeling the environments is a lot easier. But in a less physically tangible environment, say like a financial services environment, there's no physical, it's not as easy to model the environment. So that's where process inventory comes in because it creates a full model of every process that happens, who's involved with the processes, what resources. It creates this full model. Now, in that case, now that the process names and process inventory can be fed to the different systems that create and manage data in your operating environment, your defect system, your customer complaints, et cetera. And now you could use that to drive consistent and high quality data with consistent labeling to the machine learning. And now these AI models can really drive a lot of your process improvement. It could become your machine version of your Lean Six Sigma black belt that works along with your people to identify where things could be addressed.
That's interesting. A lot of companies like to do these things themselves or internal or get their own people doing it. When's the right time to look at it where we go, you know what, we need to bring in process inventory and advisors. Yep. We need Michael Shank to come in and look at this and put us on that road. And then can we get into a place, you know, I want to use the analogy of like a physical trainer, you know, over the hard training because my form was bad and they videotaped me, show me what good form looks like. Here's what a good exercise looks like. Here's what a bad exercise looks like. Companies starting down the digital transformative process don't always have good form. You get called into these organizations and help them. Yep. When's the time where we need help? Call Michael Shank.
Yeah, I think it first starts with a recognition that you need to change. So you either have an opportunity that you need to capture, you have an issue that you need to fix in your environment, and that you need to transform. I would say most organizations that don't exercise regularly the transformation muscle may not have the skill set and most likely don't have the methods or the way to do it. So I would say if you like what I'm saying, if you think that this approach resonates, and I believe fully that this is the approach to addressing complexity and chaos and driving success and transformations, read the book, understand the framework a little bit deeper. And if you really want to implement it, call me. And there's obviously other organizations that could help you with transformations, but reach out for help and make sure that you're setting up your transformation structure, your strategy, your teams, your frameworks in such a way that will get you success in a much more efficient way.
Well, that's awesome. The book is Digital Transformation Success, Achieving Alignment and Delivering Results with the Process Inventory Framework by Michael Shank. I'm assuming it's available on your website, which is processinventory.com, and available where everyone gets their books.
That's right. It's on Amazon or wherever you buy your books online.
Well, and congratulations on that. And like I say, it's quite detailed and the framework's there. So you're very generous in what you put out there. And any final comments for organizations and businesses, and maybe as far as, hey, embrace this, don't run from it, run to it.
Yeah, I think digital technologies are coming. The advancements are going to have an impact. It may not be optional whether you drive a transformational program. The external environment and the competitive landscape may get you there. So just think about how you're going to prepare and how you're going to get your organization in such a state that you could be agile in the face of this change.
And you're never done, are you? So it's
continuous.
I call them glimpses of peace once in a while, but they're glimpses.
And exactly.
Hey, Michael, this was a real pleasure having you. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Michael. This is great.
This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My executive producer is Beth Smith and director of research, Tori Smith. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. This podcast is subject to copyright by Summit Media.
Goodbye.